can go ahead and check that on the computer while I get the show going. Hello, it's Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Wow, this is November 10th, Saturday night. Saturday night's a good night. Anyway, Saturday night, last night, Friday night, 6 o'clock, main show. We had Peter Coolidge on from Magnetizer. We talked about all aspects of the healing of the body with magnets, and they're incredible for depression and lupus and all kinds of things. They allow the body to get rid of those symptoms immediately. And next week we'll have open mic with Steve Barish to catch up on the Barish world. And the following, we'll have a surprise guest the following week. We got new people coming on board here with lots of exciting things to do. And we're going to continue on with the New York stuff that we were doing last week. And we're just now, we kind of cut it right off midstream, so we're going to go right back midstream. I backed the tape up about a minute, and I was talking about the how to hook up Star Orb in front of a group in New York City about 3 weeks ago. And so roll the tape. Where's CS and Dr. Bell here?
As well. That gets rid of a lot of the satellite stuff, okay? Okay, that's
ELF,
that's called
gets rid of Star
Thank
Orb.
You. That's a solar orb.
Up on the Paradigm pages on the website. By the way, a lot of new stuff
Star
on Paradigm website now.
We sell a lot of these.
And we also want to welcome
when
the
you put one of these in your house,
Art Bell listeners from the Art Bell Show. A whole lot of new people were on Friday
you
night.
You run a wire into the ground. Because it's a ELF, anti-ELF generator, okay? Put it in your house and your wire, there's a little wire going up there. You can see it, right? There it goes. All right. First thing you do is you ground it. Second thing you do is you hook a wire from that to your refrigerator. Anybody want to know why you hook it to your refrigerator? Because your refrigerator is getting ELF and it's being destroyed by satellite. Hello? And guess what happens when you hook that to your refrigerator? Food doesn't go bad anymore. Hardly ever. Okay? We've got a guy working for me. His name is John. He's on my booth. His kids are a science. He's into science. Big science student. And they wanted to do, he wanted to do petri dishes with bacteria and viruses for his science class. But he couldn't do them in his house because his whole house is charged with my stuff and it won't grow. So, once again, I'm a tomato freak. You know, I like phytochemicals. I love tomatoes. I eat 3 or 4 a day sometimes. They'll get watery, but they won't rot. You know, you can keep a tomato for a long time in there with this. And then you hook one other wire to your plug. Okay, the third wire goes to your plug, the round part in your plug. Okay? That takes care of most problems in most houses. We sell a lot of these. I took that to Japan, and actually I took the little guy to Japan. And I went over to Kawasaki with it, that little guy. And I went in and I had all the Kawasaki and I had a bunch of Honda guys and a bunch of everybody guys over there in a big seminar in Kyoto. And I explained this to them, and I had an English, I had an interpreter, so it didn't come across too well. Mrs. Suzuki, she was at the time the interpreter for the president of General Motors, so I thought I had a pretty good one. And so I said to them, I explained this part, they didn't seem to get it. So I said, this is a better way to look at it. Sit in room, meditate, and get great ideas, you know, with this. Sit in room, meditate with that, ideas not so good, okay? That's all I said to get it across. They bought one, Kawasaki, you know, the biggest manufacturer of cranes and motorcycles and musical instruments. They bought one. And they put it in a room with their think tank, you know. And let me tell you something. About 6 months later, I couldn't ship enough of them over there. They bought the heck out of them. They still do, you know. I think they're making their own now. They figured out it wasn't that complicated to start making their own. They're all over Japan. They work great. And that's one thing. Then we made another device, which I don't have a picture of. This is relatively inexpensive. The other device, which I don't have a picture of here, is called a flamethrower. It's what I call the bad dog, okay? the way the flamethrower came, it looks like a small star orb. These are some of the scalar fields, by the way, that come off the irradiators that we make. Let's see here, where's that at now? There's a great shot of DNA, by the way. That's a good drawing. See how the colors are? See how the anandine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine? You know, get that with electricity and you have life on any planet. The colors, that's when you wear one of these receptors, because in DNA, let's, for example, let's say violet, so your sexual energy, your lower chakras are not working right. We put you on an amethyst. If I were to look at that through a microscope, an electron microscope, before I put that amethyst on, that would probably be clear in there. Or the wrong color. Put that on, that thing will just change to violet, and it just goes right into the mix, and it stays there permanently after a while.
Well, now we got to turn it over. We got to turn over the tape. So hold on. Hopefully, this on the other side of this one is a continuation of this. So we'll find out here in a minute. And we're still talking about the Star Orb, which is available on the Pyridyne website. It's an amazing piece of equipment. Now, hopefully, this will play some more, and we'll go on in through the seminar. So otherwise, I've got to change, put another tape on, because I'm not sure where tape two went. But we're waiting to see here. In all anxiety, we're waiting.
Been there because
there it is. There it is. Lucked out.
I couldn't afford at that time to do color drawings like I wanted if I did them in black and white. So you get to actually see. Okay, here's a. This is not a flamethrower. This is called a fire star. This is an aura amplifier, but we make a small version of that. It takes about 3 months to build one.
The micro star also on the Pyridyne website.
The other thing is hundreds of dollars. The other ones are thousands. All right. How did we get it? It's in this book right here, actually, The Promise. I had a contact with Sannyasi. This was back in the days when they were giving me these ideas and drawings and to build this stuff. This is a long time ago. And she said, back at the time, this is right after this had happened, this is what was going on. This would be interesting. Okay. That. Okay. At the time, this has happened in 1982. Look at her name. You know her. She was out on the desert, and the Greys came along and grabbed her and her daughter, and they took her up in a spaceship, the Greys, and she got an implant. And in the implant, you see this right here? And you see that right over there? Those two little things? That's a scan of the brain. Those are two implants. And there was a lot of this implanting going on at that time. Okay, lots and lots of implants. And I'm trying to remember Paul, which is now, I'll remember his name in a minute. So anyhow, this is what was going on. So I was putting an investigative team to go up to Dulce, New Mexico, where all of these abductions were taking place. Dulce, okay. But in the ship, there was a base in the Archuleta Mesa where the ships would come out of the ground at night and go up, these little spaceships, lots of them. And we took videos, many, many of them. And I was working with the Jicarilla Apache tribe. And it was interesting, the kids, the children of this tribe at night would not go out of the perimeter of the town because they'd be abducted permanently, never come back. They were scared to death. And so Sannyasi says, okay, why don't you go up there and we're gonna show you how to get rid of some of this energy. So I built this device and I stuck it in the back of a pickup truck that I owned at the time. I was married at the time, so I took my wife and I had two of my clients, my lady named Ann Rainbow and her husband Ken. I said, we're going to go try an experiment. She's in Santa Fe, so we just picked them up. They were one of my big clients. We drove up to Dulce, New Mexico, 2 o'clock in the morning, and we parked the truck. And I'm talking to Sannyasi telepathically, very clear, almost as like you hear me now. Just your voice was separate from my thoughts. And she says, in 14 minutes, you're going to try out that thing in the back of the truck that we made. I says, okay. And I said to Ann and Frauke, my wife, and Ken, I says, we're going to wait 14 minutes, and I don't know what's going to happen here, but it's happening. 14 minutes later, we're sitting in this dry, this riverbed with water flowing off. A gray spaceship comes at the truck, flying right at us. It's a 21 or 22-foot disc coming at a god-awful speed right towards the front windshield. And it came right up, stopped about from here to the wall back there. That's close encounter enough. And this thing is vibrating like crazy in the back. And Frank Holt's like freaking out. Her husband's almost throwing up. They never seen anything like that. Right on cue, come a big saucer hovering right outside the window. You could throw a rock and it would bounce off of it. And I says, I think this thing in the back is repelling this ship. And it was. And then it changed colors, this ugly kind of a neon color, and took off down, wherever it went. And that was the beginning of what we call a flamethrower. We put four of those in a room. And it was real interesting because the first set of those that I ever sold, I sold them right after 9/11, and I sold them to a doctor in Connecticut. And they're big boxes. They come in boxes like that because they're packed up. And when they arrived, the sheriff came with them. I'm serious. And he isn't home, and his wife told the sheriff to go away. These are flamethrowers, and they're for my husband. And, she stood up, and the cops went away. But about 3 hours later, when the husband came back, the cops were back. But then he explained to them, well, these flamethrowers are, something really quick, work of art, because they are kind of really neat-looking, have neon lights and stuff on them because they glow and all of that. So that was our first experience when we shipped flamethrowers, okay? We got a lot of neat toys. Yeah, okay, I'm finished. Last thing I want to tell you as I close is that I have these nuke alerts down there at their key fobs. They're self-powered. You might want to look at those nuke alerts at our booth, because if we ever have any of this radiation poisoning, like dirty bombs or any form, if you have this on your keychain, it will beep a certain amount of beeps and will tell you where the radiation is and what's safe and what's not. I highly recommend the product, and the guy that makes them, Sean Connor, will be on my show in 2 weeks from now. All right, I'm out of time. I hope I got everybody sort of not too mad at me for not covering everything. Come down to the booth, and I look forward to seeing you guys next year. I will be back. Thank you. Huh? Yeah. That's over at the booth, yeah. You like it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Probably being a colleague at Shawn's, you don't do SSN, but, or maybe you do.
What?
But we had 35.
Yeah, okay. Find it somewhere.
Yeah. Do you do your SSN?
Yeah, you don't care. It doesn't matter. I don't care.
I pay a lot. What do you want? What is it anyway?
We need to clear the room. There's the next event. There's also a big one.
Yeah.
And that cannot begin until we have an empty room to start. So please make your questions outside for Fred. And thank you for coming.
Some of it's in my book. I'm gonna use the rest of the room as back here.
Sure.
Don't know, but literally, what's the quantum energy? Really, what's quantum science? get it before we come in? I can't move that.
Were these yours then?
No.
The bill.
No.
Okay.
Do you only sit in one place? Yes, there's a lost and found. Check with them, okay? Okay, well, let's see now.
So he's going to come in with a massage table. I need to move
okay.
it down.
Well, let's do this then.
Do we
have
a headset?
People coming in because why? All right, well, he's not helping me out. He's trying to help me.
You want help?
No, that's a good thing.
Where's your table?
Right where this was, so.
Well, let's move this way.
Okay.
So he can break down and not disturb your business.
Okay. And is there, did he walk out with a mic? With the headset in his
hand? That I can't say. This is a handheld mic here.
Let me just make this announcement. I am Maya Rose. And if you're interested, there's a seat in the back where there will be. Just sign up for the conference group with me for the East Coast. I know the Boston. I may travel.
I guess that's over with, so we will plug in something else now. I think I was still wearing the microphone. Show was over, and that's why you heard that funny noise. But now we'll move on to the next thing here, and that will be a nice Dr. Fred Bell health science energy thing, how the body works, from a talk back in 85 to show you a big comparison, you know, how this goes. Are you there, Dr. Bell? We're looking for Dr. Bell.
I wanted to cover...
Oh, there you are, you wild man, you. Ooh.
When we were working on these pyramids, originally, the idea of wearing a pyramid on the head wasn't really mine. It was a doctor down at Newport Beach's clinic we were researching with him. And what had happened is we found that in kinesiology muscle testing, when we're looking at specific points in the body where we found specific deficiencies of vitamins, and then we put the vitamin on that point and retest, and the person will test strong, we found that the pyramid would work on any point in the body, meaning that the pyramid had something unique in it that all the vitamins had. So it acted like all the vitamins in the body. And that was the gold one. The gold one was the pyramid the gold is the pyramid structure, the actual shape of a gold molecule. And so what happened was when we used the gold, we didn't have to align it. So the idea at the time we had the gold pyramid was back in the days when we were still in the shrimp experiments, the water experiments, and the different kinds of experiments that we were doing in those days to prove the point and to learn from. Well, we started putting it on people's heads, and we noticed that the blood pressure would drop, the brainwave patterns would go towards alpha, because we had biofeedback equipment. These are the kinds of things that we noticed. But this wasn't a calculated or a precise science in these days. It still isn't, but it's a lot more focused than it was then. And so I knew at that time what copper did on the body, because I'd been studying copper bracelets and copper effects of copper on a rheumatoid arthritis. Because in this country they were giving steroid shots, and in Japan they were using copper bracelets similar to this one that would cause the body to produce its own cortisone that would then inhibit the virus of arthritis. And I wasn't for the shot way of doing it with shots, because it has a tendency to make the adrenal glands go into atrophy or non-functional. The body is like a muscle, and it has to be exercised to be strong and functional and healthy. And when you start shooting people up with drugs to negate something that the body is supposed to do, you're just going to make that part of the body more dormant. So we figured that, I noticed that there was on one side of life, there was a lot of tense housewives. On the other side, there were a lot of people who just couldn't get up and go. They were, you know, using amphetamines and cocaine and all these different types of things to get going. But any sort of practice like that would have a certain life expectancy, and then there would be a terminal result. So we began to experiment with copper. We figured if the pyramid would host energy into the body, that's like a host, then maybe if we put copper on the pyramid, that it would stimulate and become an upper rather than a downer like the gold one was. So we went out to the plater and we plated this one of these, like this one here, with copper. And we brought it back and we muscle tested it, and it didn't work. As a matter of fact, once we put the copper on the pyramid, not only did it not work, it didn't do anything anymore. It didn't even function like a pyramid. And so we didn't know what was wrong here. And so what I did is I had a stack, I made about 20 or 30 of them, and I had them all stacked like this. They were all stacked up in the corner, and I said, well, I'll figure this out someday. And I set them in the corner of my house and let them sit for 6 or 8 weeks. Well, after they sat in the corner of the house for 6 or 8 weeks, they began to change. They began to do some things that I really couldn't explain at the time. And if you look at, like this one isn't a perfect example, but it is an example of it, is that it has, if you look underneath it, it has these little spots, like pinholes that are all through the box. It's like somebody blasted it with tiny little spots. And what had happened is when this thing was sitting in the corner in the room, the energy began to migrate through the copper. And all these pyramids acting as an array or a stack amplified the copper effect, and it began to burn holes in the copper. When we burn holes in the copper, some of the gold started to show through on the inside, and this was like ventilating the pyramid. So I just, for the heck of it, I grabbed one of these funny-looking copper pyramids and took it back down to the clinic, and we did some testing on it, and we found that it worked tremendously well. It suddenly was working now, like a pyramid should. As a matter of fact, on the human body, it was incredibly strong. So that was the birth of the fire dome. One of the things that the next problem we ran into once we started marketing this product was the fact that we couldn't stack them up fast enough. When we stuck them in these big pyramids to accelerate that, we couldn't stack them up, pyramids up, as many as we could sell. So we realized we had a real production problem now. So one night I was having a glass of wine in my kitchen, playing with it, and the pyramid here, and I got it over the stove. I don't know why I was over the stove, but I accidentally got my hand in the stove in the fire with the pyramid in it, and it got hot, and I dropped it down into the stove. And the stove proceeded to burn some holes through the copper layer. And I got to noticing that that was interesting. This is a brand new one that I just got. When they're brand new, they're real bright copper color. They change color rather rapidly because they'll oxidize. And we experimented with that, and we found that it did the same thing as the ones stacked up in the corner. So now we had our heat treating process. So it was a series of accidents that got this trip on the road. I never thought back in the 60s, in late 60s, that I was going to, when I was working at NASA on a very sophisticated, you know, science, as I thought in those days it was. I never thought it had anything to do with pyramids. It wasn't something that I, you know, remembered coming here to do on this planet. As a matter of fact, I was barely interested in pyramids in those days. But I was pushed into it, okay, just shoved into it, basically. And I'm still here. Now, one thing that's unique about the copper one is that it's the only one that does it, copper being an interesting element in itself. When you wear it, it will pick up the aura fields of the wearer and it will become the color of that person's aura field. If one person wears one of these things for any length of time, it'll become all violet or all green or all blue or all red, depending on your predominant color in your aura. I was cleaning this one off with a piece of paper when I just started here, trying to see. There's so many different colors in it because so many different people have worn this thing. Now, once one person wears it for any length of time, it'll become one color. And as you change color, it's like a chameleon effect. It'll change with you. So some people will get this and enjoy it. It's not a very expensive pyramid, but it is fun to watch your aura field change. Now, let me go back into energy fields again and talk about a couple things. Okay, we discussed the fact that when we move current through here, we get a magnetic field. And in this direction, let's say we're looking across the battery, okay? The battery here. This will produce a magnetic field. If we were to switch the battery back and forth or create alternating current, it would end up getting a field, collapsing the field, building a field, collapsing the field, and we could look at the overall harmonic there and see a characteristic waveform. If we did this rather rapidly, we would see a very short wavelength, and if we did it slowly, we would see a long wavelength, like on an oscilloscope. I'm sure you've seen those things on science fiction. The oscilloscope, where they demonstrate. The oscilloscope has the ability to demonstrate this over time, this exact waveform. Then we discussed a butterfly and how an aura works. And we said that this butterfly wing had different color characteristics in it, as butterfly wings do, like a monarch has one, different types have different frequencies. And this then is basically a series of different waveforms harmonically strung together that somehow or other will operate in a color band. It could be a blue harmonic, it could be red, or a combination of leading into magenta. And this is why all these tints and shades, because we're now mixing these frequencies. Well, if we begin to mix these frequencies more and more, it's very common. Wouldn't it not be to have speech? You can end up with sounds by going down to lower frequencies. You can realize sound is a lower harmonic of color. So you would have speech. You would have thought. You would be able to interpret things. You would have sight. If we run at certain frequencies that are close to, our skin frequencies, we'll have feel. All of these sensations are built up of, on one level now, a series of harmonic vibrations. Okay? Is everybody following me so far? It's a simple message what I'm trying to get across, but there's many ways of explaining it. So now we go back into the brain again. We get back in the brain. When we look at another thing, look at the gray matter. Gray matter is like a neutral substance in the brain. It's permeable. It has a high degree of permeability. It's something like a piece of copper for the printed circuit board on it. permeable. When they have printed circuit board, what they did is they'll put a coating over the part they want to preserve, and they dump the rest of it in an acid solution, and the part that wasn't protected is etched off, and then you take it out of the acid solution and rinse it, and you end up with this impression. The brain is the same way. Now, what happens is the brain has a certain, what I would call, base amount of imprints on it that God gives us as an infant that are responsible for a certain fixed amount of autonomic or subconscious functions. Then the rest of it's kind of up to you. And the ease at which you can program a brain depends on the DNA genetic buildup and makeup of that particular individual, which then is determined by the person's genetic family tree. That's hereditary, that part. Now, if we look back in the artery here, and we see these four pyramids in here, which are hemoglobin, and you see that magnetic field around them, and depending on how these are directed, they're going to cause these particular cavities to form, which will have blood flowing in them. So if you get a particular thought in the brain long enough, which is, say, you're living in the country and you keep smelling this rose and you like the smell. And then you smell, let's say you go from a rose to a violet. Well, every time you smell it, the rose sitting out here has a particular electromagnetic emanation which is transmitted into the nose. The nose transmits the feeling via that small sensitive network that goes to the pineal gland. The pineal gland then amplifies that, sends it up into the computer here, and this pattern, this electromagnetic pattern of the rose, is super imprinted in the brain after a while. And then the violet, next we have, let's say, a violet. The violet is put in there. It has a particular characteristic over here. And if you have this experience enough over and over and over and over again, what happens is then the blood cells are let to flow in a particular pattern, one for the rose, one for the violet, and each one will have its own electromagnetic frequency. And they'll become permanent after a while. So the person can now be blindfolded, the child, and smell a rose and identify that with the rose, identify a violet with a violet, whereas in the beginning they wouldn't have known one from the other. Okay? This, in fact, over time, has given us memory. Okay, do you understand that? Everybody does not understand that. Now, once this is done, then what happens is, these work exactly like a computer. A computer memory, a core network, and a computer memory works exactly the same. Now what happens is, the body has the ability to not only tune into the two essences here of the flowers, but eventually it has the ability to tune into the source of the essence without actually in this lifetime being subject to the source. That's what's unique. That's called altering your consciousness, okay, or switching up in wavelength. Now, let's take an example. Let's go back to the vasopressin example. Okay, vasopressin, okay, equals lysine and arginine, okay, equals euphoria. Okay, everybody remember that? That chain that I drew earlier with the back around here on the backboard? Not up, down, so you can look at it later. Okay, now let's take a typical situation, okay, with time. Okay, first of all, we have seasons in time, right? You know, flowers in the springtime are blooming. In the fall, they're dying. In the springtime, again, the bee is coming and they're blooming again. The cycle's going on. We are all seasonal in vibration. The first season that of any sequence is the day. And the night with the moon, right? when the moon goes around, it changes the tides of the earth, it changes the tides of the cell in the body, because we're made out of water. This, of course, happens every 24 hours. Then we have the next change with the moon, where it's full or new, and this takes place every 28 to 30 days. Once again, the moon, a greater cycle, like another orbit, changes serotonin levels in the body, and with angry people, they commit more crimes, and with regular people that are not angry, they have different experiences and creativity. This cycle takes place. It also enters into circadian rhythms and biorhythms. These are changes in the body. Okay? To the point that in foreign countries, if you commit crimes during the full moon, or during negative or positive ionization, or witches' winds, as they call them, either type, they give leniency in certain courts, even down to the legal. And when it gets to that level, there's been a lot of hard observation made for this to be noted. Then we go into the sun. Around the sun we go. We have four basic seasons, and this affects reproductivity, creativity, laziness during the winter. We have a tendency to slow down a little bit. All these different things that happen. Okay? These are the inner cycles, the local cycles, but there are greater cycles. And all of these inadvertently affect consciousness. They all affect that one way or the other. Now we go into a bigger cycle. We take our sun and put it around the central sun, which is Alpha and the Pleiades. It goes around that every 25,827.5 years. During this time, this bigger cycle, we have what the Indians call Yuga period. Kali Yuga, Sri Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, these kinds of things. The Great Pyramid, if you take the pyramid inches of one face, divide this down into inches, and add this here, two times this, in other words, the face is here and the face is here, an inch comes out to be exactly that number, within a quarter of an inch. So the ancients obviously knew about this, okay? And what happens is, first of all, you divide that by two because that's what the ancients have done. They've divided this by two. When you divide it by two, you have 12,500 years of light and the same thing of darkness. So we immediately know that our planet, because of this cycle, is subjected to birth and death. So this becomes a birth and death planet, right? Right off the bat, we see that. And we already know about the red blood cell over here being tuned directly in as a pyramid. And this is written right across the red blood cell. So obviously, as this consciousness generates itself in increments of 1 inch all the way around, or 1 year, you begin to see that half the face of the pyramid is life and half of it is death. Okay? So this begins to tell us something. So we have 12,500 years of light, 12,000 darkness. This then is broken down into 2,500 year increments, approximately. This is using approximate terms here. And now it's divided into ages, Aquarian age, Piscean age, and all these different ages. Now what the ages mean, the ages really mean condition. You know how you have fresh milk and then it ages and it becomes sour milk, right? Or it becomes cream or butter. Well, we're also aging the carbon atom in the body, which is also the red blood cell, okay? And so the age, you can become better with age or you can die with age, depending on whether you switch up an octave. If you want to be one of these people caught in the endless loop or the closed loop, then you die with age. If you want to become transcendental, you are exonerated with age. It's up to you. It's our free choice. But the problem with aging and life is you get confrontation. You keep confronting things until you're only confronting yourself, and you are the only thing left. So that's kind of a stiff feel for some people, so they have a tendency to become a closed loop in life. It's very easy to find a comfortable space and move off into it. During this time, we have other galaxies out here. Over here we have Orion. Over here we have Vega. And we have all these different galaxies. And they are putting energy directly in to our system all the time, as we are them. And so at a certain point, consciousness evolves and sensitivity becomes greater. Because if I were giving this lecture in medieval times, I'm sure the audience would either be a lot less or a lot more, or I might be, you know, accused of witchcraft. Who knows? But the fact is, there would be an entirely different reaction in medieval times than now. Probably a lesser reaction. And as time goes on, there'll be a greater reaction to this. So what happens is, this effect is going on continually. And it should be causing a golden age, or a switching on of the higher nature. That's what should be happening. Okay? Everybody understand that? This is going off over here in left field. Okay? So it's left field, and just three axes. Now, forget all that. Well, just find out. Okay, now let's look once again. Now we have euphoria, Pisces and arginine, right? All right. Now, what could we do to enhance this? And what are we doing? In other words, we're trying to produce and get into our bodies certain amino acids. We're trying to put ourselves in an environment to create a certain metabolic reaction from these amino acids. Okay. Now, are we truly moving in a forward direction, or are we moving backwards? Does anybody know? What would happen if you were to move forward? What would be the result? And what would be the result if you're moving backwards? Does anybody know? Yes.
Through the cycle. We're moving backwards.
How do you know?
Backwards to the last stage of Pisces.
Yeah.
That's backwards.
Yeah, I understand it's backwards, but I'm just talking about as far as progress. In other words, are we evolving or are we not evolving? Does anybody know?
Evolving,
okay. Now, in this evolution, are we meeting resistance, or is this a harmonic evolvement? Okay, resistance, right. So what does resistance do? Slows things down, exactly. That's exactly right. It's like a meteorite coming in from space. And it's friction and puts a hard shell around it immediately. Okay? What is happening is, first of all, we're not getting negative ionization. We're not getting amino acids. And most of us aren't getting euphoria. That becomes something that's experienced once in a while, not every day, not continuing all day long. Okay? So we're having to fight to stay alive, just to maintain. So what would happen if we were in an euphoric environment? Does anybody know?
Acceleration.
Right, you would accelerate quicker. Does anybody know any of the biochemical changes that would take place? And can you cite any proof of that? Okay, I'll give you a couple of biological changes and I'll cite proof. How's that? You can check on it. All right, if we're moving forward, these vibrations, these cavities here, are continually, in any age, they're continually growing, but we're not able to get up on top of it. It's like a surfer that never gets up on a good wave. It just kind of wallows around in the backwash of the wave. You never get up there, and you never get up and fly. That's where we're at now. So as a result, we're turning to drugs to switch the frequency to get up there, because we get the pseudo effect of being up there, because the drug, while it lasts, gives us the effect of what it should be like. But what happens is the drug doesn't last, and you end up twice as low as you were when you started, with the vision of what it could have been, which is even more frustrating. Okay? What would happen if, this is what would happen, if we were breathing negative ions all the time, there was no pollution on this planet, we would have lots of lysine in the body. Okay? We would have lots of arginine. These would be, and we would have lots of other potentials of acquiring other amino acids. Then what would happen is we wouldn't be fighting with each other anymore. We'd be harmonious. We'd be receiving the influences of these different planets, these different civilizations, these different star clusters as they are. And it would switch the body up on a higher frequency. Down in the endocrine level, at the endocrine level, once the brain over here has received
a higher intelligence under this ladder over here. It would be receiving that. People are sensitive to that. The brain would shoot a signal down to the endocrine system. The endocrine system would remanufacture the existing hormones and begin adding links. Okay? Suddenly, vasopressin would no longer be glycine and arginine, but it would have added one amino acid called guanine, and guanine would give us telepathic powers. Okay? When guanine goes with arginine and glycine, it goes in the brain, it's euphoric and telepathic, because to be telepathic, you have to also be euphoric. And that's what would be happening. Okay? Possibly later on, we would add another amino acid, and another, which would begin to increase our powers that we had a long time ago and have lost. It was obvious that we had them just by looking at other civilizations.
Well, that was Dr. Fred Bell. Crazy guy. Talking about the human brain. I don't know if there's anything on the other side of this or not. I think this went on to another tape. But, it went to another tape. So I will find tape 4, and we'll play it next week, hopefully. And some of the educational stuff that I do at bbsradio.com. We're doing a lot of things. I want to get a reporter out there. I was talking to Don about this today. Now, if anybody out there wants to volunteer for a reporting job, and be our BBS reporter, that would be really good. Go around, like on Monday, for example, which would be November 13th. November 12th. This is the 11th, 12th. November 12th, the government is going to be releasing some UFO information, or be forced to. There's a meeting in Washington. If we had a BBS reporter, we would have that reporter there in Washington to cover this live for us. That would be really cool, but we don't have that yet. But we're hoping to get it. So anyway, something to think about. Next week, like I said, Steve Barish, and the week after that, some great guests will be coming on. We got a whole new bunch of really cool guests that I'm lining up that are very famous authors and scientists, etc. So thank you once again for making this the number one show on the network. Thank you for down there at Tan Talk 1340 Radio in Florida. And welcome all new Art Bell, George Norrie show listeners to this network. You'll find there's a lot of great shows besides mine here. And we'll see you next Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific. Ooh.